Look, if you're still buying weed from some guy named Trevor in a parking lot, you're doing it wrong. Mood.com delivers legal THC products straight to your door. Gummies, vapes, flower, the good stuff. No sketchy DMs, no med card. Just add to cart, check out, and boom, it's at your doorstep. It's legal in all 50 states thanks to the Farm Bill, and Mood's products actually work. Seriously, this isn't gas station garbage. It's small batch, lab tested, real results. Go to mood.com, use code FIRST20 for 20% off, and never run dry again. That's mood.com. Go get lit, legally.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
40 cents of every dollar will end up going to taxes if you don't plan.
Wealth is not just like set it and forget it.
This is not a free-for-all. We are blessed and fortunate. So it comes with a level of responsibility that most people don't see. And life insurance checks so many boxes because it allows you to protect your family, again, from death and disability. But then it also allows you to accumulate. So I can be protecting and saving for my wealth opportunity at the same time using the same dollar.
If you don't have the right trust and the right structure, a lot of what you built could be lost.
I want people to understand that your family is your God-given team to build wealth.
Hey, wait. I know you want to watch this next video, but listen, if you are an entrepreneur, business coach, business consultant, or a small business owner who has a story and wants to learn how to create multiple streams of income from your story, I need you to text me right now, my book, to 646-687-4152. That is my personal number. I have been an author for over 12 years. I've written 10 books. 4 of them have been bestsellers, and I've sold over 100,000 books. But I've also helped a lot of my clients take their expertise and put it into a story, then create multiple streams of income from that. So I want to help you do the same thing. So text my book to 646-687-4152. All right, let's go back to the video. Welcome to another awesome episode of Inside the Vault, the greatest money mindset show on the planet today. Listen, we got some fire for you. Today's guest is someone whose mission is nothing short of transforming the way families think about wealth. She is a powerhouse in the financial world, blending expertise in wealth building, legacy planning, and asset protection to help families unlock multi-generational wealth with a no-nonsense approach and a passion for underserved communities. She's here to show you how to make elite financial strategy accessible. Get ready to take notes because this is an episode that's going to shift your mindset and your money. Ladies and gentlemen, put your hands together. Round of applause for my sister, Mrs. Lavaysha Davis in the building.
In the building. Thank you, Ashley.
Look, I appreciate you. So all my insiders know, my goal is to always bring the top-notch experts, people who have been doing this, people who really care about who they serve. I'm fortunate enough to this show does really well. People see me in the streets. They're always like, man, this person helped me do this and that person helped me do that. And so I'm always passionate about bringing the right people up. This is well overdue. Many people know that, me, Storm, and Marvin, we had started a movement called The Path to Prosperity. And we were helping people make, manage, and multiply money. We really had a lot of people who we were helping them build wealth. And behind the scenes, right behind it, You know, anytime we talk to somebody and we were talking to them about, you know, becoming their own bank, and people were talking about, you know, getting their trust together, things of that nature. They were like, listen, I spoke to LaVisha. Yo, LaVisha got me right. Yo, I spoke to LaVisha, like every call. And like, yo, I spoke to LaVisha, And so even fast forward, you know, every time I'm on the phone with Storm, you know what I'm saying? I'm talking to Storm. He's like, yo, LaVisha. So I know what you do. I know that you do it with, you know, high integrity. I know how you feel about the people that you serve. And the great thing about it is that not only are you serving from a perspective of, you know, serving your people, but you also serve yourself, right? Mm-hmm. Your family, you know, you are, you know, happily married. I see the dynamic in your relationship, how you and your husband and your family are building wealth. And so I'm excited. I'm saying all that because I'm prefacing it. I'm excited. So for those who don't know, who is LaVisha Davis?
Thank you again, Ash. Thank you very much. So I'm LaVisha Davis. I'm founder and managing partner of LWS Advisors. It's a full service wealth management firm where we focus on entrepreneurs centralizing, organizing, and maximizing their wealth so we can transfer it with efficiency. Mm. So we can actually create multi-generational wealth. So I can't wait to get into what it really takes to create that, because we're leaving out the tips and tricks and we really giving, you know, real deal strategies.
Yeah. And so I want to start there, right? Because when I go online, all I hear is generational wealth. It seems oversimplified to me. And most people who talk about generational wealth, always talking about getting the bag. So like, it almost feels like to me that there's this message that's perpetuated that generational wealth equals income.
Yes.
Is that true?
It is not. Okay. It cannot be the furthest away from the truth. And it's one of my favorite places to start, actually, because individuals or families as a whole get very centered on the financial capital of the wealth building side. And we completely overlook the other two sources of capital that's needed to sustain and transfer wealth. So we got financial capital. We understand that. But also what we have and don't manage very well is our intellectual capital and our human capital. It is these three capital sources that's required to build, to create, and to sustain, and to transfer wealth. There's some structures that go with it too, but since we don't steward those capital sources well, we're so focused on the money that the people who can make the money, the ideas that's gonna make the money, just kind of slip through our fingers like sand. Mm. And now we're not able to systemize it, we're not able to control it, and we're not able to monetize it for a long period of time. So they focus on getting the bag, but then the bag is going to be gone because we don't have anything else. It's not self-perpetuating at all. Every generation needs to be a wealth-creating generation.
And I love that you said that, because I think a lot of times, because we focus so much on getting the bag, we, even those who make a lot of money, are stuck in this cycle of working hard for money instead of money working hard for them. Can you talk a little bit about what does that look like, right? What is, in practical terms, what is the wealth building cycle for someone and their family looks like?
So if we're talking about an individual that doesn't have a family yet versus a family, it's two different dynamics, okay? So an individual who's just starting to create wealth, it is about generating the income, that the income is needed to actually fund the necessary investments that we're going to take to grow. So income is necessary. We don't want to eliminate that or to minimize that. Like you definitely need to generate income. In fact, you need to focus on what's going to generate the most amount of income for you. Too often we start to diversify too early and we want to make income in all these different streams, when really we need to put all our eggs in one basket, hover over that basket. So every egg cracks, then we start to diversify. So we do want to generate the income and as much of it as possible. But second to that, there's three structures that we got to be very much aware of at all times that we're making money. And while we end up working real hard for it, we're not managing the structure fails. So financial structure is one. The vehicles that we use to store and grow our money matter. Like, we have to be very selective with those. They need to have compounding interest, of course. We need to have control. It needs to have some collateralization. We shouldn't have to drain a resource in order to access the capital in it. It should be something we can collateralize. But the other two structures, your tax structure and your legal structure, And those two just like fall by the wayside most of the time for in our planning. And it's not at anyone's fault.
Yeah.
It's usually because we're missing strategic advice or sophisticated advice or don't have access to it. No one's telling us about these structures and how to set them up properly. Nobody's overseeing them ongoingly to make sure they survive any economic turn, any political administration change, any family dynamic change. Like, your tax and legal structure has to reflect that.
Yeah.
And that's what happens. Like, we're getting the money, but it's just spilling out.
I think part of that, because as a business owner, I know that my legal structure and my taxes, they actually go hand in hand. And I think that a lot of people, specifically in our community, because we don't come from backgrounds of like entrepreneurs, you know, most of us, you know, some of us do, but most of us come from a space where we might be the first entrepreneurs in our family, right? We might come from a family that taught us to go to school and get a job, go to school and get a job. And so our relationship with taxes is not one. It's not a positive relationship with taxes. It's one of those relationships where we know that we're gonna work and we owe these taxes and we just pay it. So we're so used to just paying taxes that we don't look at taxes as like a strategy, right? Like, hey, this is a strategy that's going to help preserve wealth. Can you talk a little bit about that, right? Because I think that you know, somebody who's listening for the first time, or some people might not realize that tax and legal structure is a wealth building component. Could you break down, how they work together in order to, you know, to build wealth?
Absolutely. Now, even with a working individual, sometimes the relationship with taxes, because it's predetermined when you earn your income through W-2, you don't really have much say-so. So when you come from a family that's not centered around entrepreneurs, you may not have had those conversations. But when we get into the legal structure, we're not just talking about the entities and corporations in which we conduct business. Even for individuals that work day-to-day in other corporations, your legal structure is about your estate. It's about you as an individual. Everything that you own may be attached to your Social Security number, but it comes a point in time where you have to separate legal ownership from beneficial ownership, okay? So now we got to separate it outside of our estates. When we talk about transferring wealth, the only way we're going to transfer it if we create a structure outside of us that can now hold the wealth that can transfer to the next generation, because it has to survive us. So leading entities and corporations is one level, but when we take it a step up, now we're getting into trust and estates. And that can apply to a working individual, a multimillionaire, an entrepreneur, a real estate investor. It doesn't matter. If you have assets that you want to make sure doesn't go to the government that you control, whether it goes to family or a charitable organization, you have to put it in a separate legal structure. So we get so wrapped up in legal ownership, like I own this, I own that, when really we just need to be focused on the beneficial ownership. The tax structure.
And real quick, because that's game, right? And so I don't want them to lose that, right?
Okay.
So you're saying, right, that when you think about the legal structure, it's also, there's estate planning that needs to go. So even if you work a 9-to-5 or entrepreneur, multimillionaire, there's a way to structure your estate so that way, right? I heard what's the saying? Own nothing, control everything.
Absolutely.
Right? Where it's like, you don't own it, but you control it. You take it out of you owning it, put it in a structure like a trust, that you have the control of it. It's because you said
beneficial ownership.
Ownership, yeah. Right? So there's a beneficial ownership, and there's a, what's the other type of ownership? Like you.
That's it. You have your individual ownership. Well, the beneficial ownership is I still benefit from this asset, regardless if it's titled to me personally or not.
Right.
Like, my personal name doesn't have to be on it for me to benefit from it. So when you start to design a legal structure where you can outline who you want to benefit from it, now we can start to plan with more advanced tax structure as well. Because if, Ash, you build this multi-million-dollar media platform and now taxes become a problem because you're making so much money, well, when we create a legal structure that's separate from you, now we can designate beneficiary and we can spread that income. Now I can spread this income among multiple individuals, not just me. So I had to be subject to the taxation that comes to that, Antons. And now we're starting to incorporate more family members into the strategy. And this is what our ultimate message is. I want people to understand that your family is your God-given team to build wealth. And I understand how challenging it could be. I go through those same challenges. But human capital, this is what the wealthy people do. Okay, they put their human capital in a structure that they can steward and oversee for as many generations as possible, giving them all the resources they need. You don't have to all work in the same business together. You just have to be in the business of working together. So if your daughter wants to go start a technology company, that's completely fine. It may not have anything to do with the media company, but there is some type of hierarchy that can apply to. So when we get into legal structures and tax structures and how we can start to preserve much of our wealth, don't so much focus on how you make the money, just focus on making sure you have ongoing advice that when things change, okay, I need to adjust my legal structure.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, I'm making a lot more money now. I need to do a little bit more tax planning because 40 cents of every dollar will end up going to taxes if you don't plan. And that's not just payroll taxes.
Okay.
We got sales tax, capital gains tax, luxury tax, like all type, there's estate tax,
yeah.
Death taxes. Like there's 40 cent of every dollar if you don't plan. So whether you're an individual, and multiply that by the number of people in your family.
Yeah.
40 cent of every dollar for every working individual in your family. Like then we can start to get past, you know, all the petty things that we can't get over in order to work together.
Yeah, no, it's powerful because I think that, you know, again, a lot of us are not necessarily looking at it in those ways because I know a lot of entrepreneurs, people who make a lot of money, cool, again, are focused so much on the money that these structures aren't necessarily, you know, put in place. And so at what point do you start? And we're still, because I know we want to talk about the taxes as well, but at what point with this beneficial ownership, at what point do you start it? Am I a $30,000 employee? I make $30,000 a year, married, two children, and I say, you know what? Let me wait until I make 80. Like, at what point do you say, all right, now let me put something in place to start my beneficial ownership?
Well, there is some certain income threshold that you want to meet when we get into beneficial ownership. Like we do, like we want to. It has to be $250,000 or more of, like, that's your taxable income.
Like, yeah,
that's when it starts to make sense.
Yeah.
You can do it before then, but now you just kind of, you're being proactive. And there's nothing wrong with that, but you may not benefit from it as much initially.
Yeah.
But even making $30,000 a year with two children, you should have life insurance. You should have other assets that could come your way. So that's just a basic legal structure that you could buy. Basic trust, not a basic legal structure. But that's a basic trust that could be started to protect that family. And making sure if death, disability, disagreement, divorce, any of that, like you could start protection from day one, no matter how much money you make, because you don't know how much money you're going to make. And that's what that legal structure does as well, is it puts a protection in place. But beneficial ownership, there is some income thresholds because you're really doing it to minimize taxes as well.
Got it. And so now, right, so that's the beneficial ownership part of it. Talk a little bit about the taxes. So how does the beneficial ownership work with the taxes and all that?
Yeah. So if we are using the same example that I gave, where if we have a family, four children, and how many children do you have?
Children.
You have two children. Okay, I'm the only one with four.
Yeah.
I'll say, don't put that on me. Don't put that on.
Okay, so if you have two children and as time grows and as your empire grows and now you're looking at $1 million in EBITDA in your company or earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, amortization. That's a very important number. It's also a number used to value your company, but that's a different conversation. But once you get there, you're like, I don't want to pay taxes on $1 million. Like, and I don't want to have to spend money in order to reduce my tax liability as well. Well, I have two children who also may be employees somewhere in this empire. If not directly, maybe in our family trust, I can put them on some type of distribution or income. That's beneficial ownership. Now I can give one of my children, and we're not talking about the tax exemption of $14,000 a year. We're not talking, we're going a little bit above that, where we're actually distributing them income because they're in a lower tax bracket than you. Like, so now I'm okay with paying them $30,000 a year because they're only going to be in a 12% tax bracket versus me 39% at the highest. Like, you understand? So now I want to distribute that income to them so it can be subject to their tax rate, not yours. Does that make sense when we talk about beneficial ownership too?
So just for clarity, and that makes 100% sense, right? So it's like, you know, I make $1 million, you know, this year. And because I made $1 million this year, I'm taxed at 39%. And so technically being taxed at 39%, I would have to pay $390,000 to the IRS. Well, instead of paying that $390,000 to the IRS, I could now take some of that income, pay my children, put them on payroll. They become the beneficiary owners of that money, if you will. But then that lowers my taxable income. But then also that income that I was able to pass down through them, they're not going to be taxed at 39%. They're going to be taxed at a lower percentage because of how much money they make.
Exactly.
What income bracket that they fall on.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And even in addition to that, it doesn't, even if you distribute that income to them, that's more capital that can be circulated within your home. Do they really need that money? Like, you know, if they not, we can put this money elsewhere and recirculate it and use it multiple times. So it just, you can get real creative.
And you said something too, that, you know, that I wanted to talk about too, because, you know, and I'm just being fully transparent, even myself, you know, most of the times when I look at taxes and I got a high taxes, I'll just buy something.
Yeah, you know, exactly. You end up spending it.
Yeah. Because for me, I'm like, all right, let's just say in that same scenario, If I made $1 million, and I have to pay $390,000 in taxes, well, I'm gonna say, all right, can I take that $390,000 and, you know, let me just buy a building, mm-hmm. Right, let me buy something, and then by me buying that, it reduces my taxable income, and then let's just say if I bought that building. And I think it's called buy, borrow, die, right? It's like,
yes, absolutely.
I buy that building, and I have equity in that building. If I want to use that money, I could actually borrow against the collateral in that building. And so now I didn't pay taxes on it,
mm-hmm.
But then now I'm able to borrow, you know, against it, and that same money I could now spend, mm-hmm. without having to pay the IRS legally, though.
Yes, this is, yes.
Legally, like,
yes.
But then also, I don't have to pay taxes on debt.
That's very true. That's very true. That's also a strategy that you can utilize when you just want to reduce your tax liability, just go buy an asset. But everybody's not doing that.
Yeah.
A lot of, depending on the tax professionals that you work with, they want to expense everything. So people are literally spending. They're not always purchasing or acquiring or something that adds to their net worth. Like, they were like, oh, I'm just going to go buy more equipment. I'm just going to go buy more things that go in my business. I'm just going to keep expensing things to reduce my tax liability. And that's what we mean by ongoing wealth management, guys. Like, you got to be talking to someone regularly as you experience growth so they can always present you with what you can do and not just giving you limited advice. Like, there's so many things that people could take advantage of for the tax code. It's over 70,000 pages. And the first 10 tell you, you know, how much you got to pay in taxes. The rest is how to legally and ethically reduce it.
Yeah.
So if you don't work with someone that is always having that conversation with you, you may resort to those lower tactics of, let me just expense everything, and end up spending money that you could have been using to increase your value, your network, your wealth in some form or fashion that you didn't have to spend.
Right. And I love that because I think that, I would love to get your thoughts on this, right? So, you know, obviously we have a new presidential administration. That's going to change a lot as it relates to the tax. It goes taxes and tax law, things of that nature. What are some things that you foresee, you know, people need to look out for now that there's a new administration coming?
Well, actually, it's kind of the opposite. At first, when we didn't know what administration was going to take place, we were in preparation of some things expiring, of some of the tax codes to expire. So we were, as planners, we're like, okay, for clients who got estate values over the exemption amount, like, we got to get past that. Like, there was just certain things that was set to expire sunset of 2025. But now with this administration change, there's not as much anticipation to see those changes. Like, they may not change. Now, I never pledged to Dr. Friskabaugh. Like, when I said I'm a planner, guys, like, and a defensive planner at that. But we actually expect the opposite, where now we'll see an extension in some of these tax cuts that we'll be able to continue to take advantage of.
So if I hear you correctly, you know, depending on who's in office, you could, based on their policies and things that nature, you could anticipate, you know, sort of life where they stand, if you will. And that's going to affect your bottom line. It's going to affect,
yeah,
which is why it's important to hire someone who is a professional, who you know, studies these things and knows these things ahead of time to make sure, right? Like wealth is not just like set it and forget it. It's not like, all right, I got this money, I'm gonna put it right here and I'm just gonna watch it.
It is not at all. An analogy I often use is, well, this doesn't apply to certain generations because they don't have this experience. But for us growing up, our Christmas list, when we had toys on our Christmas list, and that toy that was at the top of the Christmas list, and you open it on Christmas morning and you get the toy. You're like, oh, this is the one I wanted.
Yeah.
You open it up, you try to power it on to play with it, and it's not working because you turn it over. Because what does it always say when you turn it over? What did your toy say when you try to turn it on and it did work?
Batteries
not included.
Right.
Like, wealth is that toy that everybody wants, but it doesn't come with batteries. Your professionals are your batteries. And again, that's no fault of theirs.
Yeah.
Entrepreneurs are very overwhelmed.
Yeah.
As entrepreneurs, our primary objective is to get the
thing good.
Is to make the money. We have staff dependent on us. We have our family dependent on us. Like, that is our focus. But then if you tell me I need to shift my focus to go talk to my CPA about a conversation telling me what I need to do from a tax perspective, and I don't even know what he's talking about, then I need to go have a conversation with my financial advisor to say how I need to invest the money that I'm saving on taxes, but I don't know what they're talking about. Or I need to talk to my insurance agent because my network is growing. I am buying new properties. My business is growing. The value is going up. I don't know if I'm properly insured, but I don't know if they're telling me the right thing either. But you're having all these conversations and it starts to sound like Charlie Brown after a while. Like, wah, wah, like, listen, this don't got nothing to do with me making money.
Yeah.
So what happens is it gets pushed to the wayside.
Yeah.
Like, here, you and everybody starts to work in their independent spaces. CPA stay over here, and she earns agent stays over here, attorney stays over here. Nobody communicates amongst each other. So now we don't know if our wealth is even working in congruence. Like, is it working together or if it's working in conflict? So it's not the fault of the entrepreneur. Trust me, guys, I know. I talk to you guys pretty a lot.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I know that you took one hat off to talk to me for the day. But what we have to understand is, in order for it to be successful, we do have to overcome quite a few emotions that most entrepreneurs struggle with. And put a professional in place that can have those conversations and bring you those high level conversations so you can make your decisions the way that you do as a business owner.
No, I love that. And so talk a little bit about like the, you know, like thinking about your family as a business, right?
Yes.
Because I think that, I think love is important. You know, I think that love is important, but I think that when people go into their family, that's like the main thing they focus on is the like love aspect of it. But talk a little bit about how, you know, running your family like a business or looking at it.
Your family is absolutely a business. Regardless, you're not just mom and dad.
Yeah.
You're founder and co-founder. You're CEO, CFO, CIO, whatever, CTO, whatever positions that's needed. Every business has income and expenses. As a household, you have income and expenses. You have the opportunity to buy assets and liabilities. Like, your family is a business, and the whole objective of the family is to grow the last name, the value of the last name. So you have to see it as a business so you can start to see the opportunities and challenges like a business. Like, when you had a startup, you know, you need to build systems, processes. You got to do something to generate sales. Same thing in a family. Okay, we need to build a system that we're going to use to build wealth. What do we want to do? Do we want to do enterprise, real estate, digital app products? Do we want to do collectibles? Do we want to get into artwork? What do we want to do to actually build wealth? You got to build your system. Then we get into the structure. So when you start to identify, like, yes, my family is like a business, it really kind of opens up a third eye and allows you to operate with a lot more intention behind your movements than just short term. I think you start to look a little bit more long term.
And what's a family office? Like, I know, like, I've read like the, you know, what Rockefellers do. And, you know, I've been in wealth management before, and I've like you know, heard this term, you know, family office, 5-4. For our insiders out there, those who never heard of a family office, what is it, Direct?
So it's a service that's usually reserved for ultra high net worth individuals worth for $50 million or more, where they gather the group of professionals, the ones we've been talking about, all these people, instead of them working for several other people, they're focused on the financial success of one family. So they hire them internally, and they are usually very expensive to build out because you have to bring these professionals in. You have to bring a CEO in to oversee the professionals and make sure everything works together and that the eyes are always on the money. Because if you take your eyes off the money, like it starts to slip away like sand. Like through excessive taxation, through litigation, through excessive debts, interest, when you're not getting that spread, it gets crazy. So with what the professionals do is they all work for a specific family. Now, because of technology and other advanced systems, it's no longer reserved for just ultra high net worth individuals. So now we're able to bring this same service. It's called a virtual family office. That's the service that we provide, where we can provide entrepreneurs with that same level of service without the high ticket that usually comes with it because they're not on the salary
right. For
you. Now it's just like you're paying your service provider.
Oh, I like that. And so now, if I hear you correctly, you know, family office, again, dedicated person, keeping their eye on the money, usually starts at $50 million. But because of technology, you're able to provide that to the everyday person.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And so let's talk some strategies now, right? So some strategies to generational wealth. What are some you know key steps that families can take to make sure that their wealth doesn't just last one generation, right? I was watching a study the other day, and again, this is not even just Black community, it's Black, white, everybody. That the average family's wealth is gone by the third generation, right? And so, yeah, what are some strategies that families could use so that their wealth, you know, lasts past them?
So I've been fortunate enough to work alongside, you know, some very advanced planning teams. And so I want to be very clear here that I'm still within my own generation, my first generation of wealth creation for me individually. So when I speak about from experience, I mean just from what I've seen with other plans that I've been a part of. But ultimately, that legal structure is what makes the difference. The same one I spoke about earlier. You have to give your wealth a different environment to survive and thrive in. If it's just within you individually, it will die with you. Now, you also have to equip the next generation to participate in that. What we usually lack is some type of governance system. We think that it's a free will. And I want to be very selective with my words here. But we give too much free will to like our children. I know we want them to pursue their passions. We want them to be whatever it is they want to be because they can. But other cultures do that, but with limitations. Our family needs medicine, technology, law. Like we need specialties in this area. So here's the list of things you could choose from. Like you could go do what you want to do, but it got to be off this list.
Right.
So one thing about preserving wealth for multiple generations is making sure.
Fall is all about cozy comforts, but when you're prioritizing your health, it's easy to feel like you're missing out. With Hero Bread, you can enjoy all your fall favorites because they're made with Hero Bread sliced bread loaves, tortillas, bagels, dinner rolls, and more. Try their all new Hero Noodles with 12 grams of protein and just 80 calories. So skip replacing every carb with cauliflower and indulge in your breakfast, lunch, and dinnertime favorites while still hitting your goals. From breakfast bagels and meal-prepped enchiladas to mouth-watering burgers and cheesy noodles, you won't believe Hero Bread's options have 0 to 5 grams net carbs and are high fiber from the taste and texture. They've even got small batch drops of indulgent favorites like the popular Hero Croissant. And right now, Hero Bread is offering 10% off your order. Go to hero.co and use code FALL25 at checkout. That's FALL25 at HERO.CO. All figures are per serving of Hero Bread. Contains 2 to 18 grams of fat per serving. See the product nutrition panels on Hero.co for more information.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax tip and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
So that everyone understands the role that they play as their human capital, what they can do to contribute to it. and fulfilling what's really needed. Or two, we end up branching out and we lose our human and intellectual capital. So we're going to lose it the next generation. All they're going to do is spend it. They're not adding to it. So you have to give a structure that they can participate in. It has to have a governance system, like voting, just like the United States of America. The same thing applies. We have to have a governing system. We have a voting system. We have to have significant roles or cabinets that need to be filled. You got to fulfill these roles. And then the next generation is going to come in. We're going to equip them the same type of way. But it's really about having that structure that you can even pour wealth into. It's too retained individually.
And how do you do that, though? Like, come on, like, cousins and them not getting along, siblings not getting along. Like, what does it take to, you know, do this successfully when there might, you know, like how do you get the family on the same page, if you were?
Well, you got to start with, you got to lead by example first. Like, most of the time, they have to see it work. You know how our family is. Like, they want to see it first. So you may have to lead by example. The second thing to that, it may not always be your blood family that you're building this with. It could be by, you know, other bond affliction, someone that you've met throughout your lifetime. I like an example I like to use is the Anheuser-Busch family. Like, that is a successful family that had that their corporation for over five generations. They don't have it in now, but that's a combination of families. Those two men met. They weren't like that. That's not just one family. So you got to understand and keep your God works through people all the time. So you have to see who that bond is actually formed with, and then take it from there. It may not be your cousins and all of those good people. It may not be. It's unfortunate, but it may not be. But even once you prove, you know, you've shown some type of example, and then they want to come in, just also don't be so quickly to shun them away. Sometimes we feel like if people didn't get it the first time, it's like, now you can't get here.
Exactly.
Like, you know, like we can't shun them away. I'll use my family as an example. I'm the youngest of four. So they call me Boss Baby because I was always trying to tell them what to do. Like, no, we need to do it like this and we need to do it like this. Nobody ever listened. So my husband and I have been on this entrepreneur journey since 2009, like way before it was trendy, right? Like, so my family's seen our ups and downs. They've seen us go from, you know, filet mignon to mac and cheese. Like, they've seen the roller coaster, but then they also start to experience the growth, the success, and they've seen it. And now it's like, okay, what can we do to help? So now a large majority of our family are on some form of payroll within our portfolio. So it may not come right away.
Yeah.
And you don't want to shun them when they do come.
Yeah.
But our job is to make sure we educate them enough to be positive beneficiaries, positive shareholders, positive directors, positive contributors to the wealth. That's where our mindset has to be.
And I love that, though, too, because if y'all hear this, it's really about, like, what is your ultimate goal, right? Ego aside, because that's what it usually is. It's like, yo, I told you let's do this together and you didn't want to do this and you watched me do it. I took all the risks. Now my ego is saying me, I. And so now I'm not willing to bring you in. But the truth is that sometimes people need a leader.
Yeah.
Need to see. People may not necessarily need the idea, right? Because they might not be great executioners of ideas. They may be great executioners of things that are proven. And so you may have been chosen, right? Even as baby boss, right? You were, you know, and I get it, though, because I'm like, all of my siblings call me little big bro because I'm the youngest, right? But I too am, like, I was the favorite. I too was the, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm the chosen one. But at the same time, like, being a chosen one, you understand that it's a responsibility, again, not to shun, you know, your family away, but to be the example. And whenever they're ready, right? When a student is ready, the teacher shall appear.
Absolutely.
And so I like it. So let's just say, right, a family is starting from scratch, mm-hmm. right? Starting from scratch. And they want to, you know, start building multi-generational wealth. What's their very first step?
Protection. Because what we all don't seem to do is assess the risk that comes with this journey. Let me tell you why I start with protection. So my brother, My late brother was a Golden Glove middleweight champion. So he required his sisters. Everybody had to know how to fight. It was terrible growing up. Like, it was required. It was required. But what was the number one rule, he always said, like, keep your hands up. Don't let nobody catch you with your hands down. I don't care what's going on, keep your hands up. You always do protection first. So as a kid, I was like, why does he keep telling me this? But now as a planner, like, protection is first. So there's so many risks that we take every day. The biggest one is expecting that we're going to make it home that day. So the one thing that you can do is life insurance from day one. And why I love life insurance, because it covers the second part that you got to do, protection and accumulation. I'm telling you guys, focus on having the money ready for the opportunity, not deploying every single dollar. Like, when I say save, it's because if we are really trying to build wealth, it's really about being able to take advantage of an opportunity. It's about who got the right amount of money at the right time. They might foreclose on the house next door. Sad for Miss Sue. I hate to hear it, but that might be your opportunity. Like, you know, so protection and accumulation. Life insurance checks so many boxes because it allows you to protect your family, again, from death and disability. If God forbid, if any of that was to happen. But then it also allows you to accumulate. Mm. So I can be protecting and saving for my wealth opportunity at the same time using the same dollar. So that's what makes it the center or the heartbeat of most wealth plans, because it's the only vehicle that you can access, accumulate, and transfer money tax-free. Every vehicle doesn't do that. So if you focus on accumulation and protection first, life insurance is the best place to start. And do that for every family member, including the children, no matter how young. You can get life insurance on babies as young as 6 months old, mm-hmm. but that becomes capital. Like, for example, for us, our children, each of our children have two policies apiece. Yep. One is for their future opportunities, whether they want to go to school or if they want to engage in entrepreneurship, whatever. The other one is for when they always in your pocket, because you know they're not leaving.
Thanks.
They're not leaving. Your children are going to call on you. I can't pay this. I done gotten myself into this. I need this. And rather that coming out of your pocket. So that was just a little tip in there. But life insurance is the best place to start, so you could do protection and accumulation. Yeah. And then you kind of build on top of that.
Yeah. No, I love that, because I think that a lot of people, especially in our community, look at life insurance as only death benefit. Like, yeah, I'm going to bury a loved one if, you know, God forbid, you know, they go before, you know, I mean, I try not to say God forbid, because I believe that everything, you know, that God doesn't make mistakes. But if they go, you know, because everybody's going to die. So in our community, we only look at life insurance from a death benefit perspective. But you know, in the way you explain it, you know, it's for your life. Life insurance insures your life, but not only when you're dead. But that also brings up becoming your own bank, right? Mm-hmm. Because you talk about accumulation. So, and I've been hearing that a lot. Can you break down that concept for us? You're talking to, how old are your children?
My children are 13, 11, 8, and 6.
All right, so we're talking to the 8-year-old. What's your 8-year-old's name?
Taylor.
All right. Oh, that's my daughter's name. Yeah, my daughter, my oldest daughter, 16.
When her birthday?
So, April 3rd.
Hers, April 13th?
No.
Yes. Yeah. Wow, that's crazy. That is crazy.
Wow.
That's crazy.
God, that's crazy.
Two Aries named Taylor.
Name Taylor.
Yes. Oof. Watch out.
Watch out. Like, that's what I was going to say. So, all right. So perfect, right? So, you're explaining becoming your own bank mm-hmm. to Taylor.
Yes. Okay. So but see, Taylor knows this.
Yes.
They have pretend plays, so they talk about this all the time. But if I'm talking like, hey, you know, you need to build a bank, right? But you can't just have any old type of bank, because there's people who want to come after your bank sometimes. Sometimes people want to come after it. And sometimes in order for your money to grow in that bank, it has to stay there. So with those two things alone, we want to build a bank that can't nobody just come in and take, and that is going to grow no matter what, and is not going to be subject to any losses. So I want to introduce you to something. I'm going to take your regular piggy bank. I'm going to swap it out for this more concrete bank over here. Like, this concrete bank over here is going to do two things. It actually has two tunnels inside of it. The one tunnel, tunnel A, is to protect you. If I lose the income, my family won't suffer.
Mm.
That's what tunnel A does.
Mm-hmm.
Tunnel B says all the money that's left over after going into tunnel A, It's going to go into tunnel B and it's going to earn compounding interest. So now it's growing at the same time that it's protecting me. So when that money grows and you keep adding to your bank, And then when a opportunity, when you're at the grocery store and you just happen to hear two people talking like, you know, I've been trying to sell my building down the street, but, it, you know, I just haven't got the right type of buyers. And you hear like, I only want $30,000 for it. And it's like, you know, the building worth $100,000. Like, wait a minute. Let me go in my bank real quick and see. Not only do you have the $30,000 in there now, and I'm talking about over time, but now the $30,000 is in there and I can take that $30,000 and go buy that building, but I'm still earning interest on the $30,000 while I'm buying the building. So we need a bank that is flexible, that grows again, no matter what. We don't want it subject to market risk, business risk, real estate risk. None of that. None of that impacts it. And this is the bank that's going to do that. So that's what we mean by becoming your own bank. It is a complete risk mitigator.
Love it. And it's using the vehicle of life insurance.
Yes.
What type of life insurance do you need to start that?
It has to be permanent cash value life insurance. This is not buy term and invest a difference.
Okay.
That won't work.
Yeah.
What are you going to invest the difference into?
Yeah.
And how much difference are we talking? $100? Yeah. Like, what are we doing? Like, you know, so we don't want to do that. We want permanent cash value life insurance.
Yeah.
Now, there are other types of life insurance, but I want to focus on whole life and universal life. Those are the two common permanent vehicles that's used for this accumulation that we're talking about. Because when we accumulate that capital, we can leverage it for investment opportunities throughout our life. It also can become tax-free income for us in our future. It can also become a source of capital for multiple generations to use that we can loan to them to go and become the wealth creators we need them to be, to bring that money back into our structure that we created that's going to sustain our wealth. So that life insurance has to be permanent cash value life insurance in order to do that.
Nice, nice, nice. And so I often hear you say that wealth is not a luxury.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, again, when we think about our community, you know, we're used to struggle. You know, yo, how you doing, man? I'm all right. I'm maintaining, trying to make a dollar to fit some cent, right? Like, you know, why do you say that wealth is not a luxury?
Because it's a responsibility, and it's two parts to that too. But to whom much is given, much is expected.
Yeah.
So if you are asking or seeking for abundance, you have to be prepared to take care of those around you. That comes with that. You have to be prepared to properly educate and instruct those around you to understand that this is not a free for all. Like, this is not, we are blessed and fortunate. Mm. So it comes with a level of responsibility that most people don't see. It just looks like glamour. Like, no, it requires hard work. It costs a lot of relationships. It costs a lot of time. Like, it's not just all fun and games. But what I also add to that, when I say wealth is not a luxury, that's also wealth management is no longer a luxury. It's a requirement.
Yeah.
Because if not, we're going to continue to see our members of our community live paycheck to paycheck to probate.
Yeah.
And we just can't have that. Yeah. It's no longer allowed.
Yeah. Yeah. And specifically, you say this to towards like the underserved community.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that shift like necessary specifically for like underserved?
Because when I say underserved, I just mean from an aspect of professional advice.
Yeah.
Like, and again, it's not that it's not anyone's fault. It's just there's so many emotions involved with seeking professional advice.
Yeah, yeah.
Now you have to overcome the fear, the anxiety, the embarrassment, whatever you think you may face, the distrust, all of these things, all of these emotions are ramping up, and it just, again, calls you to push it by the wayside.
Yeah.
So when I say underserved, it's because you may not feel comfortable walking into the Merrill Lynch to get the wealth advice that you may be seeking, or you might not feel comfortable walking into a big firm knowing I need tax planning, because we're making the income. Like, we have seen significant increases in the amount of income that we earn in our community. That's not the problem. But we don't want to get the professional advice because of those emotions that we encounter when we even think about it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. If you were to leave our insiders, our audience, with one like key message, what's that key lesson or key mindset we would love?
One that we just said: wealth management is no longer a luxury; it is a requirement. If we really want to see wealth preserved, if we want to create it, if we want to sustain it, if we want to transfer it, You have to remove yourself, those emotions that you experience whenever it's time to have a conversation with a professional, and actually engage with one, and not just any old type of professional. Like, look at what you're doing. You know what you're doing. You know how much money you're making. Be real. You can't go to Easy Tax Services and you did $750,000 last year. Like, that don't make sense. Like, you know, you need to go to the expert or the professional that can meet you where you are. So from that, let me add to that too. As I mentioned earlier, that your family is your God-given team to build wealth. It doesn't have to be by blood. It can be by other bond affliction. Whoever you are building with right now, you, your spouse, your best friend, your cousin, your sister, it doesn't matter who. It starts with two people that decide we're going to work together and we're going to pursue wealth collectively, and we're going to combine all of our resources. And the last part, the financial capital is not the most important. The financial capital is a result of the human and intellectual capital that creates it. Control the human, access the human and intellectual capital, you'll get the financial capital. But you can't do that if you're trying to do everything by yourself.
Yeah, no, I love it. Behind the scenes, your husband and I were talking, and he, talked about this relationship. Talk to me about this first relationship, Red, that you're about to start.
Mr. Davis always working on something, and I'm always the last one to know about it. I just get the checklist. This is what we need done.
Yeah.
Like, it has, He says that because I'm only here where I am today, the person that's speaking to you all, because I give a lot of the credit to him.
Yeah.
We met very young, and he was very patient with me, and I did not come into this relationship as a woman prepared to be a wife. I'm like, you know, I wasn't, not at all. Okay?
Wow, you said that on camera.
I did. I said it on any camera all the time. Like, that's not a problem for me. Like, my husband taught me a very valuable lesson at a very young age for him. As I was young, youthful, loud, opinionated, you know, had a little bit to say to me and more than I should, you know, when I was experiencing that part of my life.
Yeah.
He was like, come here, baby, come here. I need to teach you something. Like, come here. I want to teach you something. I'm like, well, what do you want to teach me? Because again, at that time, he like, I'm going to teach you a game. And I'm like, well, what game? I don't want to play no game. He like, come here, I'm going to teach you again. So he pulled his chessboard out. It's all nice and brown and gold. I don't even know where he got this from. I'm like, where did this? Been living together for 2 years. Where you get this chessboard from?
Yeah.
But he brought this chessboard out. He's like, we're going to learn how to play this game. So he taught me all the movements of pieces of chess. So he's telling me which direction everyone can move in. But he reserved the king and queen for last. Like, you know, this one has a limited scope. This is the pawn can only move a certain number of squares. The bishop can only move in certain number of squares or in certain directions. The bishop, or I'm sorry, I think I said that piece already, but ultimately, once he got down to the last two pieces of the king and queen, he was like, see, this is me. I can only move one square at a time. He's like, you're going to be able to go in rooms I can't get in. You're going to be able to talk to people I can't talk to. You're going to be able to do things I can't do, because the queen can move all over the board in any direction. You have way more power, but nobody's going to be able to see that power or experience that power if you keep behaving this way. So I was like, okay. Now, he don't like when I say this, but even when he was teaching me, I didn't conceptualize it right away, because I'm just like, because he's telling me why, you know, I need to be moving like this and how the king can't move. And I'm like, I know he ain't sitting here telling me how he going to be my pimp. And then he was like, no, I'm trying to tell you. Like,
the job of the queen is to protect the king.
I was like, okay, I get it now. So from that, like, why we like to share our experiences like that, because we got together so young and we were very fortunate to build together.
How old were you?
I was 18. He was 20. Okay. So senior year in high school, like, we were very young. I got married. We got married when I was 21.
Yeah.
On my 21st birthday.
Yeah.
So we just celebrated 15 years of marriage.
Nice.
So when we talk about family wealth, we mean it. We live by it, like, day in and day out. Our children are very much engulfed in it. Our parents, they didn't get it 14 years ago.
Yeah.
They didn't get it then, but they get it now, and it's like they're really behind it. So he always encourages us to speak more into marriages and into couples, to give them the power, the love, the spirit that we received, divinely for me, because it was, we didn't have any marriages showing us this, but what we received and giving that to other people.
I think we got to do something. We got to figure this thing out, because equally, and I actually, that's why I brought it up, because again, behind the scenes, We were talking about the toxic people who, the rejects, if you will, who are online, you know, spewing hate around, you know, family dynamics, right? Mm-hmm. To the point where there's this narrative around love and relationship where people don't even see the benefit of it, right? Like, I have a lot of my young, rich friends, actually, who are like, yo, I'm never getting married. I'm like, bro, why would you say that? And they're like, it doesn't make sense. They're like, it doesn't make sense to me, you know? And I get where they're coming from, but I also understand that it's coming from a place of listening to all of, like, what's in the air of, you know, this toxicity of this divide, if you will, of relationship. But I would love to see, because, like, my wife and I, we met actually at 21. I think she was 20, I was 21. We started dating when 2 years later, so I was 22, 23. And so we've been together ever since. I'm 44 now, she's 43. So, you know, 21 years, we've been together, married 17 years.
Congratulations.
And I would love to, I'm a tester. I would love to know, I would love to do like a roll call, like, yo, black couples who've been together 10 plus years, like, where y'all at? Because I do, and whenever y'all ready, though, I would love to, you know, however way I could support what y'all doing, I think that's important. Mm-hmm. You know, my wife is I'm the outgoing one, if you will. My wife is all strategy. She likes to be behind the scenes. She hates the camera. You know, I've been sort of like forcing her, you know, out a little bit. And part, you know, like I think we did like 2 interviews together so far. And we even, like, you know, testing the waters of doing a podcast together. And that's one of the reasons, right? It's like, yo, like, let me not have disdain for the people who are willing to talk. For what, no matter how I feel about them, you know, I may be part of that problem too, right? Because I'm not talking enough about, you know, I'm not showing enough what a healthy relationship looks like. Mm-hmm.
I mean, well, you could definitely take some accountability for not showing enough. That's kind of where we were, what Mr. Davis has been alluding to. But
you call him Mr. Davis?
I do.
What? I do. Y'all need to talk, man. I mean, my wife, they call me Mr. Sands.
Oh, I don't call him that at home. I call him that when I'm in front of camera.
Oh, I thought you over.
No, I call him Daddy at home. Look, he's cute.
I want you to.
I call him Daddy at home and Mr. Davis. And so, because everybody can't accept when I say Daddy, it makes him cringe. Yeah. So I just say Mr. Davis.
Yep.
But, anywho. Yeah. But I blame the music.
Yeah.
Because
it was sex.
Yes. No, seriously. When I grew up, it was, I want to be your chick.
Right.
I want to be, like, so it was different.
Oh, that's true.
Like, you know, yeah. I had different influence in my time.
Yeah.
So I wasn't in pursuit of short-term interactions. I wanted to be down. Like, you know, like, so it was just, it depends. So
I think it goes to bring that.
It may be, but it's not getting the mainstream play. Yeah. Like, you know, you're going to have to make your children some mix CDs. You're going to have to make them some music to remind, like, it wasn't just this. And you're going to, and because that's what I'm raising 4 daughters.
Yeah.
Like, so I try to play that music that infuses love, self-love, relationship love, like pouring your heart out love. Like, because that's what I had. And I think that's what my husband had too. And that's why we are able to remember and kind of build on that.
Yeah.
Now everybody is just like, what can you do for me right now?
Right.
And then, and then it's just over and we're not looking at the long term. And that's just not even on the relationship side, even on the wealth planning side. Nobody looks long term. It's so short term. When we do planning, we plan it 50 years out.
Right.
Not 2 years, not 5 years.
Yeah.
So you got to think the same in your relationship.
Yeah. Yeah. And I it's a point though too, but even as we kind of connect the two, I think there's a real connection though to wealth, right? You know, and family, because again, if there aren't healthy relationships even, right? Because the divorce rate is really high. And what happens to wealth, you know, once there's divorces and split families, blended families, and baby mothers who, you know, don't want, you know what I mean? There's just a lot that goes, that complicates things as it relates to building wealth, which actually also goes back to, this beneficial ownership conversation that we had, because if you don't have the right trust and the right structure, a lot of what you built could be lost.
Especially through conflict. Yeah, absolutely through conflict. All I hear when you say all that is more human capital, but that's just me. Like, you know, I hear something different in there. And that's the other thing that keeps our community from seeking the professional guidance they need, because everybody doesn't understand our complex dynamic.
Yeah.
Like, that's like, I won't say it's just our culture, but there is some cultural relation that you got to have. You have to understand that I have children by 3 different women.
Yeah.
And I actually still take care of these women.
Yeah.
And I want to plan for all 3 of them. And it's not a bad thing. Like, you know, with Western philosophy, sometimes that's viewed as a bad thing, that a man still wants to support who he's no longer in a relationship with, but have children with. And it's like if you walk into the wrong type of firm, they won't understand that.
Yeah, yeah.
And they won't plan for that. And it could disrupt the peace that you may have amongst them. So it's just, there are things, there's always nuances. And that's you can't do it on your own. You can't see every angle by yourself. So you kind of need those additional professionals to help you see all those perspectives and tell you what you can do in your special dynamic.
Yeah, and I love it. And so, like, right now, you know, somebody just, you know, they watched you. They're like, man, I like her a lot. She has a lot of great information. What's the process of working with you and your firm?
Yes, absolutely. So, of course, we always want to partner you with the right type of advisor. So what we do is just a quick consultation just to see where you are, like what your ultimate goals are, what your objectives, what's been your biggest challenges and obstacles with achieving that. So we can partner you with the right type of advisor about where you are. So that's a quick 15-minute consultation. Then you get a free 1-hour consultation with the advisor that you're paired with. And we offer maybe some preliminary planning conversations at that point. But we do kind of work with each, revenue level, because it's more like we service a lot of entrepreneurs. So we serve different revenue levels, but we work with working professionals as well.
Okay. Okay. And so is there a charge? Like, they got to pay you up front to have this conversation to figure out where they...
Not initially, no, because we got to see if we can even help. So I can't charge you, and I don't know if I can help you.
Yeah.
That wouldn't be practicing with the best amount of ethics.
Yeah.
However, when we get into now, we want to find those gaps.
Yeah.
Where it's like, hey, when we talk about those challenges and obstacles, and we're going to give you a solution to those,
yeah,
then we do offer like a wealth assessment. Like, okay, let's see all your moving parts. We'll review all of your tax returns the last 3 years, your operating agreements, your entity structures, your trust if you have one. We'll look at everything that you have, your P&L statements, your balance sheets, everything, and kind of find all the gaps and holes, tell you how we could solve those. And then that just comes with a set fee for that. And you can choose to either take that plan and take it to other professionals to service, or you could choose to work with us. And we offer a subscription-based level for that too, to make it more accessible.
Nice. What is your passion? Like, did you say, all right, this is what I want to do for a living? Like, where did you?
No, it was tragedy triggered change in my family. I was originally wanted to go to medical school. I wanted to be a doctor. I was studied biology at the Ohio State University. But we, like I said, we started this entrepreneur journey in 2009. So from 2009 to 2014, even though we were struggling, we thought we were doing it. Like, because we started businesses, we were, you know, making some money. It wasn't always the right way. We didn't know what we was doing. But, you know, we thought we were doing big things. And then in 2014, unfortunately, my brother was a victim of violence. And again, he was the only boy. So that was devastation to my family, like watching my mother lose her only son. And then watching her lose her only son, my niece was 10 at the time, and he didn't have his affairs in order. So we didn't have any financial resources for her. And my mother didn't have the financial resources to take off work. So she couldn't even afford to grieve. She had to go right back to work. We couldn't afford to bury him. And us as the entrepreneurs thinking we were doing it couldn't help. And it was like the biggest gut punch I probably ever experienced in my life. Like, I have been out here with my chest out, like I'm doing something, and I can't help my mom bury my brother. So it was like, oh no. So the focus just shifted. to how to understand money and how to help families avoid that type of situation where if one can't do something, somebody else can, and where you guys have a plan that works together collectively that just can't be disrupted by things that's going to happen in life. Like, you know, you want to have financial foundation is you want to be able to support those in need. You want to be able to support your children in their dreams. You want to be able to support yourself, and your dollar can't work in three time zones at once. So you got to put a plan in place.
Right.
Man, love it, love it. I'm actually glad I asked that question because I think that just kind of understanding, because again, like I said in the introduction, like you do your work with such care, like you like it's the biggest I won't say compliment, but review. Like when I speak to people, they're always just like, man, Lavaysha and her team, like, yo, they really took care of us. But now it makes sense, right? Like now. When we you understand the why, you understand, you know what's being done, how it's being done, and the passion behind it just comes from a very important place. We appreciate you.
Thank you.
If people want to, you know, follow you, connect with you, where can they find?
Yeah, so I try to keep it simple. Everything is my name. It's Lavaysha Davis on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. You also can visit LavaysiaDavis.com in order to schedule that time with my team. So that's L-A-V-A-I-S-H-A Davis, D-A-V-I-S.com, and Lavaysha Davis on all platforms.
All right, y'all. So look, we're also going to put the links in the description, but we are closing out the vault. Another awesome episode of Inside the Vault with Ash Cash, the greatest money mindset show on the planet. Make sure you follow us or go to our website, InsideTheVaultShow.com. Follow us on all social media platforms at Inside the Vault. Also, go to my website, IamAshCash.com. Follow me on all social media platforms. I am Ash Cash, and we will see you next time. Same time, same place, in God's will. Peace.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.